Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
All right, welcome to Bet the Edge. I'm Jake Croucher here with Drew Dinsick, recording late Sunday evening. Today we're going to talk about some initial thoughts on the NCAA bracket. We'll talk about some tennis with Carlos Alcaraz reasserting himself at the top of the pile and Iga Swiatek doing likewise, I guess, in Indian Wells. And then we'll talk some NBA down the backstretch of the season and then quickly a pretty interesting Champions League draw. Where there are eight teams in the draw, two sides, and the four best teams ended up on one side and the four worst teams ended up on the other. But Drew, let's start with college basketball. What were your initial reactions to the bracket?
Very balanced bracket overall. And glad to be talking about college basketball, a very beatable market, unlike Aussie rules football. West Coast Eagles.
Long time.
Swans got home, but West Coast Eagles, we were joking. 49.5-point favorites. 50-point margin, Jay. That's a tight market.
They were dogs. 49.5-point dogs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, 49.5-point dogs, and yeah, they lose by 50. So yeah. tough to make money in that one. Anyway.
Just quickly, what were we talking about the other day? The Sydney Swans are an absolute juggernaut.
Yeah,
they're a trunk. They're the favorite to win the premiership, and they're not in the market, and they should be.
So, Swans are swimming. Swans are Swans is singing? I can't remember how the song goes. Anyway, the NCAA bracket and really just conference title weekend in general left me wanting a little bit. I didn't really feel like there was tons of macro storylines that came out of what we saw over the balance of the weekend outside of NC State, who somehow put together a run of form that I don't think anyone saw coming. Ultimately, the way that it was populated and sort of kind of the key angle that tends to get chewed on is who are the big snubs? Who are the, I think for the most part, everybody that deserved to get in got in. And if you want to say around the edges, the Ohio States and the Wake Forests of the world who've been playing really good basketball deserved a shot. I feel that way. But, they needed to do better over the balance of the season to really earn a spot. And I think in a lot of years, last year was a good example. The bracket is a little bit imbalanced. And you can take advantage of that by looking at, you have a very good team here. And they are the clearly best team in a weak bracket. A weak region, and they're on the other side of all of the good teams, and so they're only going to have to play one of those. And this is just kind of classical game theory when it goes to looking at draws in a single elimination tournament, be it tennis or college basketball, it does not matter. Same philosophy applies. If you are to take a future position right now, you should literally be looking for, is there a way that I can capitalize on results that do not incorporate this team at all, right? I'm going to take a shot on this team, and the reason I'm doing so is because I see team, A, B, and C are all in harm's way, either because of the draw that was afforded them or because of, some other factor in terms of their resume that you don't particularly like. My guiding principles for college basketball and breaking down this tournament are very straightforward. We've said them numerous times on this show, but it is worth restating them for freshness. I will not ever go to war in a one-and-done elimination tournament with a team that cannot create defensive turnovers. You have to be able to have extra possessions in a one and done scenario if you are at a disadvantage because your opponent happens to catch fire shooting the three. This is, happens every year in, year out. And if you are in the bottom 100 of defensive rebounding teams, you are not going to the dance with me. That is for sure. The teams that qualify in that bucket right now are Purdue at the top of the list. Maybe Purdue with a bullet, actually. The Creighton Blue Jays, the Illinois Fighting Illini, and the North Carolina Tar Heels, the surprise one seeds out west. These teams are all on upset alert for me before they even get to the Sweet 16, and it has nothing to do with who they are ultimately playing, because all it takes, ask Purdue last year, is running up against an opponent who is, you know, they have a hot hand going for them, and if you can't create extra turnovers, or if you can't create turnovers in order to close that gap, then you are not long for this situation. This is not best of seven elimination NBA playoffs here. You don't get a second, third, fourth chance. So I would say very sincerely that I'm going to be picking against those four teams in particular with these draws, looking for some of the longer shots with, you know, decent looking resumes as we, you know, put together brackets, as we put together Final Four pricing. I think ultimately my only future outright bet is the Houston Cougars. The Connecticut Huskies scared the bejesus out of me, but they do have, to, you know, for what it's worth, over the last month, this is a team that is flagging when it comes to creating turnovers. And I think there is, if there is any imbalance whatsoever, I do think that UConn got a tough draw, having Iowa State as their two. I think Iowa State is the best of the two seeds by margin. I think Marquette is the worst of the two seeds by a decent amount, which is good for Houston. And I think ultimately UConn potentially drawing the winner of San Diego State, Auburn, or even a wildly informed UAB is potentially an interesting matchup for them when you get to the Sweet 16. I think if Florida Atlantic or Northwestern, both of those teams are good enough to challenge the Huskies. And I think, so basically outside of the Stetson matchup, Huskies in round of 32, Sweet 16, and Elite Eight, all three very, very tough matchups. So at price, I'm a bet against UConn right now.
Okay. My only follow-up, given this is much more in your wheelhouse than mine, is noticing some disparities where some of the sharper books, perhaps relative to market, are protecting two teams in particular, Tennessee and Auburn, whose prices are fluctuating from, you know, 11 to 1 on Tennessee out to 15, 16 to 1, Auburn 13, 14 to 1 out to 18 to 1. Not massive gaps, but a little bit. Tennessee seems to be a team that has gathered a lot of momentum in the market. Do you have any interest in either of those two teams at price?
Yeah, so I want a piece of Tennessee for sure. I like their draw a lot outside of the very, very capable of an upset. St. Peter's Peacocks. The Peacocks are nasty. They, of course, took down Kentucky in what was the only 15-2 upset a couple of years ago. They I think match up fairly well against Tennessee. So if Tennessee can survive that 2-15, I think they're going to the Final Four. It's a really, really good team. And they have kind of the exact correct profile overall. Like the one kind of area that they are a little suspect is how often they give up the three. And if you watch enough NBA, you know that like the propensity to give up the three means less than the quality of shot. Like it's not an independent variable there. So otherwise, that's a very, very sound team with a very good defense, great rim protection. You know, skilled at every level, and every kind of key aspect for college basketball. So Tennessee ultimately coming through as a three seed, I would not be shocked whatsoever.
Okay. All right. Before we get into tennis, spring training is here. So for those looking to get ahead on the upcoming MLB season, grab your RotoWorld Baseball Draft Guide. It's loaded with comprehensive positional rankings, projections, and player profiles to ensure your draft is a success. Visit nbcsports.com/draftguide and use code BASEBALL24 to get 10% off at checkout.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
All right, Indian Wells. It seemed like on the men's side that we might be in the midst of a changing of the guard of sorts, where Yannick Sinner goes off favorite against Carlos Alcaraz, looks like he's going to absolutely roll him. And then Alcaraz flips the tables, wins as an underdog, then destroys Medvedev in the final. And then on the women's side, just business as usual, Iga Swiatek takes down Maria Sakkari, 6-4, 6-love. Sakkari? We decided on that one?
Sakkari?
Okay. Well, it doesn't matter because she lost 6-4,
6-5. she got sacked. Closed.
Minus 670. So no changing your name to what you want, Sakkari, after pulling a Devin Achan, A-Chain, where apparently if you have a big performance, you're allowed to change the pronunciation of your name. So what were your big takeaways out of Indian Wells?
Yeah, so no real surprises on the women's side with Iga rolling. We didn't ever see her really in harm's way this whole tournament. So we don't really, you know, like we've talked about this, I feel like a lot. I don't know if it was behind closed doors or if it was actually on the pod, but Iga is now at the stage of her career where if plan A goes according to, you know, as hoped for, then she turns into just an absolute, snowball rolling downhill. It just is, it's just so dynamic late in games once she's solved her opponent. Like really, if there's a wobble, if somebody is getting the better of her early on, and if she has to go to plan B, or if she just loses a little bit of confidence, that's the only times we ever really see her vulnerable. And she had no issues with the draw she was afforded in this match, in this tournament. And, it's really kind of the ideal situation for her to excel. And she was incredible. I guess the major takeaway on the women's side is the rest of the field, who I thought was kind of at the peak of their powers, kind of close to, career peak ELO numbers recently for Sabalenka, for Coco Gauff, for Rybakina. Rybakina didn't even play because she's apparently injured. Sabalenka was a wild disappointment, not even getting to the later stages of this tournament. And Coco Gauff ultimately flamed out, and Sakkari was the beneficiary of all that. Sakkari really needed to put together some good tennis to start building her confidence. But, she doesn't excel on clay. She doesn't excel on grass. So the fact that she got into the final in this one and got some very valuable ranking points is going to help her substantially in the fall. So maybe kind of keep an eye on her and see if she can kind of build on this and be a threat once we get to, U.S. Open season. Disappointing effort from Naomi Osaka, who we were watching very closely to see if she could put together some form. The market is going to be pretty cool on her at Miami, I would expect, and I may just take one last shot to see if she can find anything, because that is her backyard. So she should, in general, it's faster conditions, so she should benefit from that. Really, the gap on the women's side is kind of as big as it's ever been, in recent memory between Iga and the rest of the pack. And, it's tough to see it's tough to go against her with confidence at this stage. The men's side was the much more valuable data set because Carlos Alcaraz comes through and played a very different style of tactical tennis than what we are used to seeing from him. It felt to me at least like I was watching, Nadal in terms of his approach to matches, where now I'm not talking about the shots he was making, the style of tennis he was playing. It was much more just, how am I going to use my resources over the balance of this match, right? He was not afraid to kind of experiment a little bit, test his opponent a bit, give up a service hold early in the tournament, knowing that he was going to have opportunities to break back later on. You saw it pretty regularly, like completely unfazed, unflapped by conceding 6-1 to Sinner in the semifinal first set, completely unfazed, giving up the early break to Medvedev in the final. And just in general, if you can dispatch Medvedev as well as he's playing this season, and if you could end the reign of terror that Yannick Sinner had on the rest of the tour, we need to be paying sincere attention to how good you're playing right now. And honestly, Alcaraz needed this because he played one warm-up match on the clay swing in Rio de Janeiro, where he got hurt on the third point of the match and had to to retire. And I think if he had not put together this run here, we would be scratching our heads a little bit about how to treat him, how to price him when we get to the clay over in Europe coming up in about a month. So that was a hugely, hugely impressive performance by Alcaraz. And I would say that in general, I still put Sinner number one right now in terms of like what's fair rating, who's the number one power rated tennis player right now. It's clearly Jannik Sinner. Alcaraz is very, very close behind him though. And if those two don't again kind of meet in Miami, it will be a little bit of a shock. Neither of them is going to play Djokovic in Miami as he has pulled the ejecto cito and will not be competing for a Miami 1000 title. He seems entirely checked out of competing in the spring in general. And I think that makes sense because he wants to kind of let these, let the young kids kind of fire all their bullets at each other and be peaking for Wimbledon so he can take back that title before whatever happens the rest of his career. So pretty noteworthy that Alcaraz got the better of Sinner. And I think we're going to see a rematch in Miami, and I would tilt in the balance. I would tilt in the direction of Sinner, particularly if Alcaraz goes off as favorite.
Do you think it makes any sense that Sinner is double Djokovic's price at every Grand Slam?
No, not even remotely. I mean, U.S. Open and French Open, especially Wimbledon, I'm fine with. Djokovic, you want to have Djokovic your top choice at Wimbledon? To me, he is telegraphing that that is what he is pointing to. I don't think you're going to see a very sincere effort from him on clay until Rome. And I don't think you can realistically expect him to win Roland Garros unless it gets handed to him the way it did last year with Alcaraz cramping.
Yep. That makes sense to me. I think Sinner at every price now. And I mean, it's so, there's strange markets, the price, because, you know, these guys are going to win seven matches. Grand Slam, and they're all like, you know, plus 150, plus 210, like you multiply the money lines. But those three just seem so far divorced from the field, given that, you know, my man Holger Rune hasn't really emerged as, I get, maybe as expected to be kind of the guy alongside Sinner and Alcaraz as the youth movement. But yeah, I think Sinner at price seems like the best bet. And if you're throwing, if you have another long term bet and you're happy to throw Jannik Sinner at plus 350 to win the US Open, is, I mean, to your point, his price doesn't really make sense relative to Djokovic in particular.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk some NBA as we head into the last 15, 16 games or so. Wild Sunday of games with back-to-back buzzer beaters. Bam Adebayo, big kind of red flag game for Kate Cunningham pulling the trigger when you've got shot clock off, tie game, and you decide to pull the trigger with 10 seconds left. That's completely indefensible.
Yes.
And then not quite as bad, but still pretty bad, was same situation, Jamal Murray pulling the trigger with six and a half seconds left. Yeah. I get that you shouldn't always, you know, you can't always just be like, oh, I'm going to shoot it with 1 second left. And sometimes you want to give up or you want to leave room for an offensive rebound, but not at 6.5 seconds when the other team has a timeout in hand. So generally, Drew, anything that you're looking for in the game by game markets in the NBA and this upcoming?
Yeah, I love the Cade Cunningham call there because a lot of people probably did skip that one. It's second game in a row of Heat Pistons, right? You know, I think it was instructive to a degree in a couple of ways for talking about how to bet NBA right now. Must win does not mean must cover. Right. If you're playing a team that's likely tanking, should you have a 3 or 4 point surcharge on your market price? No. That said, is there that much of an incentive for these teams like the Pistons and the Wizards? Wizards especially. Like the Wizards seem like they really are not interested in playing competitive basketball. You know, Hornets to a degree, and then you know, only team you know, really in the West that doesn't really seem to be giving you like an honest effort right now is I don't know. I don't really, really know if I want to call anybody out, but the, you know, the teams that are effectively positioning themselves for draft right now, you kind of have to pay attention to motivations. The clear and obvious example is the Raptors. The Raptors do not get their first round pick if they do not continue to lose basketball games. That pick goes to San Antonio. And so there are a couple of scenarios here in the final frame of the regular season where you just are going to have to pay pretty close and look for in-game opportunities to bet against teams that are playing surprisingly well through, say, three quarters, and then ultimately pull the rug on themselves as they do not really want to win the game. So I would say in general, You know, look for opportunities to bet against teams that are not inclined to win. And I don't think that there was necessarily a tank in order for Detroit, but that was a very bizarre end game sequence there. And it was a bummer as someone who's holding Magic Southeast outright. So I would have loved to see the Heat, you know, fumble the bag there and, you know, kind of give up some serious, some more ground to our Orlando Magic. So, you know, the rest of the top of the West is kind of the key to focus on right now. And you brought up the Nuggets end of game. I'd like your opinion on this. Worried at all about Murray? Like, does he look like he's a player that's taking any step forward? He was a guy that I kind of assumed was going to make the All-Star team this year and was going to be like, you know, a true blue Robin to Jokic's Batman. But Jokic looked like he was pretty out of gas today. I was kind of surprised that he wasn't able to be more effective against a team in the, you know, Mavericks that have so many fundamental flaws with their, you know, for frontline defense. But I don't like what we're seeing right now from some of the supporting players around the Nuggets. And I think if there's any kind of way to, you know, go at that team from a betting standpoint, it's going to have to be, you know, counting on the role players not stepping up and supporting Jokic.
Yeah, Murray's a weird one. I think he's the exact type of player where it's just the way that he plays is conducive to having a higher public opinion than perhaps reality, just because he is such a tough shot maker and he's done it in the playoffs, and we overvalue those things relative to what, I don't know, like Rudy Gobert does on a night-by-night basis where you can't really see him as much, just kind of completely warding off the rim. I mean, Murray is, like, his offensive EPM this year is plus 3.7. Like, that's elite territory. That's 95th percentile in the league. But yeah, he's been a, you know, he's probably like a plus three type of guy whose offensive game is very resilient in the playoffs because of what a great shot maker he is. But I do think the interesting thing with Murray is that it does feel like we're on a collision course for Celtics Nuggets, even though the Nuggets are odds against to make the finals. It really feels like they're going to make the finals at this point. But it was interesting in the previous Denver-Boston game that Murray doesn't really have a place to hunt on the Celtics. Like, he can't go at Jaylen Brown, Tatum, Drew Holiday. Like, those guys are just too strong. Murray's not that fast. Like, he just kind of gets to his spot. He's strong. He pushes guys off. And the guy that he had the most success with was Derek White, who, and it's weird because it's the same thing with Jimmy Butler, who is similar to Murray in a way, not super quick, but just kind of bullies to his spot. And Butler would always go at White in those Celtics Heat playoff games. And Murray would go at White too. But one, Murray's not Jimmy Butler. He's not as strong as Jimmy Butler. He's not as good as Jimmy Butler. And then two, like, if your place to pick at is probably the leading candidate to be kind of guard representative on all defense first team, even though it's positionless, but they're going to put a guard on and he's probably the safest bet. That doesn't bode great. And I think everyone, like, I think the kind of casual consensus is that Jokic will be the best player in the finals. Boston will be favored, but they'll lose. Like, I don't know, man. As someone who's holding a lot of Celtics equity, I'm perfectly happy to see, well, I'd rather see someone else other than Denver in the finals because I think they are the best team in the West. But, like, I'm not, like, shaking in my boots that the Celtics are definitely going to lose to Jokic, because Jokic is going to have to do everything and he's going to get pretty gassed. And Murray, I don't think, is going to be in position to have a great series there.
Mm-hmm. You know who they're not going to, you're not going to have to worry about seeing in the finals if you're a Celtics backer? The Suns. The heck, guys? What happened, guys? What's going on with Durant? Is he out of gas? Like, that was a pretty weak effort against the Bucks today. And also, you know, I'm still kind of, raw from Friday, with Thursday, the brutal loss to the Celtics. That was the second half. Just felt like such a non-compete from them. And it's like, this is not a serious team.
The Sunday matchup, Suns Bucks, I think that was kind of the two good fake teams where I still want to give the Bucks a chance with, like, we haven't seen with Doc, like, Middleton get sustained run. And I think Middleton is so underrated for that team. Not because he's particularly amazing, though he is really good. It's just, if Middleton's out, like, they closed the other night against the Sixers. And again, by the way, they almost lost at home to the Sixers with AJ Green, which is ridiculous. The team is what, third favorite, fourth favorite for the title? And they're closing games with AJ Green. I don't care if like Middleton's your third best player. If your third best player is out, you still shouldn't be in a spot where you're closing with AJ Green. Like, Pat Bev is what he is, liability on offense. Jay Crowder is kind of trending towards done, it looks like. Bobby Portis, who was insane against Phoenix, is still a horrific defensive player in there. I think they're 8 points worse with Portis on the court. So, yeah, the Bucks. To me, the most interesting thing in the East is just if Donovan Mitchell can get his knee right. Like right now, the Cavs, their price to win the East is almost four times the price of the Bucks. Like that's crazy. Like that doesn't cohere at all. The Cavs are the fifth favorite in the East. I'm sorry, the Cavs are more likely to make the finals than the Heat, and more likely to make the finals than the Sixers, who have the same price as. So It feels like they're drawing dead, and everyone's drawing dead against Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I think that you could construct a case where if you know that Mitchell's knee is going to be right, that the Cavs should be joint with the Bucks to win the East.
Yeah, credit to you, hat tip to you for finding anything interesting about the East to talk about. Guys, I'm struggling, man. I guess the Knicks are playing good enough basketball that they might be a little funky, a little frisky. And like, honestly, like teams like the Cavs and the Knicks kind of finding their legs and being kind of healthy and playing well, that just means the Heat are less a boogeyman, right? I mean, yeah. I don't think the Heat are going to wind up in the play-in and have to draw the Celtics in a 1-8, but they might, but somebody, it feels like somebody, like Heat might be somebody else's problem. And if those teams are actually competing well, then I could see pretty interesting outcomes there. The West is really what's drawn mostly my interest right now. And I'm a little divorced from market on my likelihood of Dallas getting in. I think today's win over Denver was massive six seed equity for them. And I think, I'm still like on Kings fade island. Like I cannot square a price right now with Kings in any way, shape or form in any market that I'm looking at. So I think Kings to miss and Dallas getting in and with that six seed is still pretty likely at this point. And I think, the 7, 8, 9, 10 in the West is going to be probably the most entertaining that's the next most entertaining basketball we're going to get outside of March Madness, I suppose, if you really, if you like March Madness. But those two matchups potentially with Mavs, Suns, Warriors, Lakers are going to be fun. That Warriors Lakers game was very, very entertaining. And those two teams playing for the 9-10 for the right to knock the Suns or the Kings out of the playoffs would be pretty good. Because again, my projections right now would have Mavs flipping Kings being the six. I think you're going to get Kings, Suns. I think you're going to get Warriors, Lakers. And I think between those teams, it wouldn't shock me if Suns Lakers find their way out of the playoffs the way they're playing right now.
Yep, I could definitely say that. The last thing on NBA before we move to the Champions League is I can already see, at least in my mind, how this is going to play out with the Knicks. They're going to take care of probably the Magic at this point. It's probably their most likely opponent in a 4-5. The Knicks will win that series most likely. And then they'll play Boston. And the narrative will be, can you go deep in the playoffs when you have Jalen Brunson on defense? Because he is going to get eviscerated if they play Boston. And this was instructive when I went to the Garden a few weeks ago to see the Knicks in person. And just seeing how Butler and really everyone was just kind of hunting Brunson every play when the team was engaged and running the real stuff. And it puts the Knicks in rotation. They're just in constant rotation if a team is picking up Brunson because they're not okay with just Jimmy Butler going at Jalen Brunson. Like he's 6'2" and he's not particularly athletic. He's an incredible outlier offensive player. He's seventh in the entire league in offensive EPM. He's got a higher offensive EPM than Stephen Curry and LeBron James. Like the guy is an absolute marvel on offense, but he is a negative on defense. And I think the regular season gets hidden a bit, but if a team decides to do like the LeBron hunting Steph in the finals, just every single play, bring me Steph and Curry to eat on a ball screen, then I think Brunson is going to get exposed. And that's going to be the big storyline the Knicks. And also a storyline will be Julius Randle bricking shots, which will happen in the playoffs as it does.
Okay, let me make a market for you. Knicks playoff wins over under 4.5.
I would take the over on that just because of the likelihood. I think that they're going to see the Magic or the Pacers in round one, most likely the Magic at this point. And they're going to be pretty short favorites in that series. And then they get one game against Boston. They'll lose 4-1.
Gentlemen sweep.
Yeah, that's
4-2 magic, 1-4 Boston. Okay.
Yep, that sounds about that's, right. That's probably my rate.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Okay, let's close out with the Champions League quarterfinals. This is an interesting one from a math perspective, and I don't know the answer to this, but keen on your thoughts. I'm holding a lot of Man City to win the Champions League, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted in the draw. And on face value, you think, well, the Man City are drawn on the same side as Arsenal, Bayern Munich, and Real Madrid, who are the next three best teams in some order. I would say Madrid, then Arsenal, then Bayern. And then the other four teams are on the other side, Atletico, PSG, Dortmund, and Barcelona. Anyone who's only casually following soccer, Barcelona are not good this year at all. They have been a disaster and not impressive domestically or really in the Champions League. But I wasn't sure what type of draw I wanted because, on one hand, you don't want to play the best teams. On the other hand, when you are the best team, which City are, it is, in a way, better to play Real Madrid over two legs and reduce the variance as opposed to having to play them in a one-off final where, obviously, with the small sample, there's just more variance. So what do you think? Do you think that this is a good draw for City or is it just kind of neutral?
I agree with your point that it was a good draw for City. I think home and home against Real Madrid is advantageous, and home and home potentially against Arsenal is huge. Like, I don't think those are the two teams that I sort of had circled as, well, that, you know, if they run into you and they get their hot in that, single deciding game in London on June 1st, then you could be in trouble. More obvious than that, who in the world is looking out upstairs for PSG? Holy smokes. Like, I don't rate Barcelona at all in that head-to-head, and then they get the winner of Atletico Madrid, Borussia Dortmund. This is that's as soft of a 1-2 punch as you could have ever asked for out of these final eight teams. I don't know, man. Freaking Mbappe. In another life, I offended him greatly, and he's specifically coming after me personally to try to make my life miserable. And it's come close a couple times, but he's going to have a field day against this Barcelona team. He could come away with three in those two head-to-heads. And then I'm hopeful that Atletico Madrid comes through because they play such a slow defensive style of soccer in general. And, hopefully that would be the kind of antidote to keeping Mbappe from running away with the top scorer title. So it looks like we're on a collision course for PSG, Man City, in my opinion.
Yep. Well, I think PSG are the best team in the bottom half, which is insane to say because PSG is not very good.
No.
And I think that, if Inter were in the bottom half of the draw, then they would be, I think, clearly the best team. PSG have been not diabolical, but they've been very uninspiring domestically and they just don't have the same talent level that they've had in years past. This is kind of a transition year for the team. They decided to get actively younger. They lost Neymar. Messi didn't really replace them. Marco Verratti as well, who'd been kind of the metronome in the midfield for so long for them. And these other teams, like Dortmund is fourth in the Bundesliga. They're 6 points behind Stuttgart. Yeah. They're just not very good. Barcelona, as mentioned, have been somewhat of a mess all year. And they go up against Atletico, who on Sunday, Barcelona went into Atletico's home stadium and beat them 3-0. So that's where Atletico are at the moment. They've been sliding in 2024. Now, you can make the case Atletico might be the team that is most suited to playing these Champions League ties instead of just playing kind of week-to-week domestically, because they are so good defensively that when they lock in, and Diego Simeone has a great record in the Champions League, their manager. So certainly scope for Atletico to reach the final. I would say the biggest betting takeaway is that when you're considering betting a team to win the whole thing or to reach the final, you have to heavily weigh now that everyone on the good side of the draw is going to be very short in a final, whoever comes out of the bottom side of the draw, at least bottom in terms of the quality. So yeah. Man City could be minus 500 to lift the cup in the final. And so right now the market is implying like they're plus 175 to win it, even money to reach the final. So that's implying that they're, in decimal odds, $1.38. So what's that, like minus 275 or something to reach or to lift the cup should they get to the final? I think that might even be not aggressive enough.
Like,
I
agree.
Given that they were, I think, minus 450 to lift the cup against Inter last year, and Inter were traveling, I think, at least as well as these teams are. So, I would rather bet City at plus 175.
Can I ask you a weird question?
Sure.
There's been a rule change, right? The draw is new. They randomly pulled for opponents up until, you know, all the way through to the final. Every other year that I've handicapped this, and I was caught by surprise when they put the bracket up. I was like, it's not really a bracket. And, oh no, it is. Like your opponents are set. There's no more, there's no more cloak and dagger stuff here. So is there any chance that even in this very liquid market, the sharpest, most liquid market in the world, is everything priced correctly?
Yeah, having kind of looked more into this, particularly in the past couple of months, no, they're not. And as liquid as these markets are, like they're liquid in that you can get, you know, 10K down on Betfair at a price point. Like that's not, you know, global liquidity levels that we're talking about for NFL lines or totals or anything, or even money lines for Champions League matches. So, no, I don't think that these markets have to be correct. Naturally, you would suspect that the Champions League outright is going to be more solid than the second division Danish outright. But I think that these can absolutely be exploitable if you're willing to put the time into it. And, you know, sometimes these you just look at the different market types and they just don't correspond to each other with the reach the final and to win the outright market. So, no, yeah. I don't think, I mean, the way I'm looking at it, I've been betting the Premier League outright market, which I don't think is as solid. I think that the outright market is just like heavily overrating Liverpool and has been for a while now. So, yeah, I think these markets are more beatable than even I thought a few months ago before I really started diving into it a little bit more.
Yeah, because like I tried to square away these are big bets you can make right now. Not like, you know, run away and buy an island type of stuff, but like the to reach the final and to win the UEFA Champions League prices don't make sense to me. And it almost feels like people are just sort of, or maybe people are missing that they have fundamentally changed the format.
Well, I mean, 18 months or less than 18 months ago, the Chiefs Super Bowl price was just completely wrong. You can get to win 100K on the Super Bowl pretty easily. And the market was just completely wrong and wasn't baking in the fact that post-Hamlin that they had this kind of gifted path to the one seed and the market. And even after like 2 weeks of that being known and heading into the playoffs, like, well, if you just add up the money lines, they're not going to be that price. So, yeah, sometimes these markets, they have the illusion of liquidity because of the stature of the market and the fact that it's the Champions League or it's the Super Bowl or whatever. Sure. But they don't have to be. They certainly don't have to be correct. Or the game by line, the game by game market lines, they are correct.
They're correct. They're true. They're
correct. Wouldn't be blasting into to Man City to win at the Bernabeu or close, but might blast into them to win the Champions League. All right, we are done. Don't forget to check out NBCSports.com for more information to help you with your wagers. Thanks to those watching on the NBC Sports YouTube channel. If you're listening to us in podcast form, don't forget to rate and subscribe. Also, a reminder to find your favorite NBC Sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports. From Jake Croucher and Drew Dinsick, we'll see you soon.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.